Centauri apparently have tentacles near their genitals and they have 8 penises. That's in show lore. Weird race.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, yeah, there was a show where he literally had his dick on the table playing poker, stealing the cards.
Oh, so yeah, it's like a porky penis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Porky penis. Excellent.
It was the year of fire takes.
The year of deconstruction.
The year we took down Deep Space Nine.
It was the dawn of a new show.
The year of a great journey.
The year of deadlines.
And the year of joy.
It was a new season.
It was the end of another.
It was the year everything changed.
The year is 2026.
The name of the show, You Gotta Check This Out.
Welcome to You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I am Dre Alvarez, joined by, I don't know, what's your name again?
I'm Mike. I'm here every single week, and most weeks you do remember to introduce me before the guest, so I give you props for that this time, Dre. I'm Mike Slater.
Mike of MikeSlater.com, and we are continuing through Babylon 5. We are on to season 4, introducing people that haven't seen it that we say you've got to check out. We forgot that, you know, you really do need to watch 60 episodes if you're going to check it out, but we booked them ahead of time, so we can't stop. We have the fantastic Hannah Michaels on to join us on this show. Whatever hype we want to give, Hannah, I'm going to let you decide what things to pump up, because you've been around on the internet. You've been around on the internet forever, and I think you've got 3 or 4 viral things at minimum in your past, including your current coaching. So anything you would like to discuss?
That is refusing to go viral for good reason, because it's in the wellness world and I'm not comfortable with it. But I mostly coach writers and artists and help them bring their ideas to fruition. So it's not like that woo-woo. And or help people like cement the stuff they learned in therapy already. So I'm not like pretending to be a therapist either.
Babylon 5, what is your background with the show? How much had you seen before we asked you to watch?
0 and 0.
Awesome. And did you do any additional research, watching, etc., after we had you watch this episode?
I did not have time. I watched it today at the last minute.
For what it's worth, that is, as long as the timeline allows, exactly what we love. So it gets more funny, right? Because we, as I mentioned, this episode covers a lot. And it's like wrapping up stuff that you're going to be completely new to, and you'll get to listen to me and Mike fumble through explaining the Baxter, et cetera. And then the other just follow-up, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is you're a big Deep Space Nine fan. Yep. Shout out to Across Collab, patreon.com/JeffMay. And then Jeff Has Cool Cards is the YouTube channel where you broke some Deep Space Nine cards. You opened them with Jeff and found a really cool hit. We'll put a link. I don't want to spoil it. But I believe you're a big Star Trek fan.
Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of, I don't want to say controversy. I know there's
shared history.
A lot of backstory and shared history between these two shows.
As a Deep Space Nine fan, Babylon 5 first watcher, with someone in that era, I am curious, you know, obvious comparisons. How did it work, and did it happen to scratch or hit any of the nostalgic, like, you're used to shows like this, so watching this is like, you know, an old blanket, or was it you never grew up with it, never watched it, so you're like, what the heck was this?
In terms of storyline, I was like, what the heck was this? Because I just dropped in to what I'm guessing is a main storyline episode and not an episode of the week. What definitely seems like a main storyline episode, yeah. Anyway, because so much has happened. I definitely felt that. In terms of, there were some things that felt very familiar. I feel like in scene 1, Sheridan compares conflict to giants on a playground, and I immediately felt at home because Star Trek has so many ham-fisted metaphors that are completely unnecessary and complete. I think Futurama even makes fun of it.
But yeah, the giants in the playground, ham-fisted, that line does become iconic, first said by Ivana but repeated by Sheridan discussing, yeah, at the start, and you're saying like relates to Star Trek and like,
yeah, that felt familiar. I at one point you put in the notes that something was a comedy bit, ? And that is very Star Trek. I'm pretty sure this was for laughs.
I'm excited to talk that scene when we get there, because that was very jarring watching. And I've seen this multiple times. Like, wait, what?
Sometimes they hit, sometimes, often, and I guess that's true for any genre that's not comedy. Comedy is a refined skill that not everyone has. In 2 series of Star Trek, Worf is like the foil for that. And sometimes it really works. Sometimes you get like a long episode lead up to a deadpan joke that really works. And usually it doesn't. Usually it's just, Worf.
Worf.
Yep.
Agreed. Okay. And the good news is now we get to the previously on.
Previously on Babylon 5.
You know, our last episode, we actually put the first two episodes as one because a bunch was crammed into there and it was exposition. Great episode, everybody. Check that out. You can find out Mike Slater with Mad Bread. You can find out all about music either on the main episode or the bonus episode. So we only have two episodes since then. And we have The Summoning, which was oddly kind of like a bottle episode, right, Mike? Definitely filler, which is weird because we have these old races called the First Ones that are going to be in this big battle. Our two big races are the Shadows and the Borlons, who are fighting the Giants in the playground. The lesser races are trying to find a way to fight against them. And so our characters are kind of catching up as our two leads, Captain Sheridan and Security Chief Michael Garibaldi, so, you know, Picard and Worf, both went missing after last season. And so episode 3, The Summoning, is kind of as they're coming back. Everybody's figuring stuff out. Delenn, our Queen Bonehead, is trying to rally everybody with, you know, lacking the leaders. And so everything comes to a crescendo with Sheridan reappearing and saying, we're going to fight. And everybody having spent kind of the episode before kind of just like, how are we going to fight without the captain?
We get a lot more into the new telepath on the ship, Leeta, who took over for Talia Winters. She's kind of the liaison to the Kosh ambassador, who's been replaced by a new ambassador, and she got along with the old one. The new one is kind of, I know it's hinted that he's kind of abusing her in certain ways, her powers, and he's kind of just like feeding off her. And that's been kind of going worse and worse for her as we find out more about how the Vorlons, not just the Shadows, these two big races that are above everybody, the First Ones, are just fighting each other.
That actually sounds like a TNG thing, where I swear to God, they do this to the empath all the time. They sort of brain violate the empathic character every chance they get.
Yeah, that's all through Babylon 5. They've been doing that to the telepaths.
Episode 4, last one before this, falling towards apotheosis. Incidentally, there is a director's commentary, which is just actually four actors on the show talking this episode. It smacks of a Gamefully Unemployed movie night, but worse.
How? The Gamefully Unemployed movie nights are us yelling at our cats.
That would have been more enjoyable. But yeah, so we get a couple things, which is the Vorlons have, you know, are escalating things. They're just blowing up planets. And that'll definitely come up on the next episode, how it goes up. The apotheosis does mean like deification. And so what we learn is the Centauri, the peacock feather folk, their emperor has basically gone insane. And what he has said is, he's in the middle of this big war, and he's told, hey, you're in the middle of this big war, so make sure your defenses are up so the Vorlons don't try and attack you, the big squid ones. And then he comes and he says, I'm not going to put up our defenses. Londa Malari, our main Centauri, says, oh, I'm so glad to hear that you've come to your senses. No, I'm going to let him blow up the planet because they promise they will make me a god, and I will live on forever by, you know, basically sacrificing the entire planet to do this. Which,
yeah,
you know,
he's been not the Vorlons, but the Shadows, the other big space god creatures that are fighting. He is quartering them on the planet of Centauri Prime. And everyone's been wondering, like, why are you doing this? Why are you letting them there? And slowly, like, he's been just having everybody killed who votes against this, because the Shadows are the one who promised him godhood. And now the Vorlons, who hate the Shadows, are going to blow up the planet, and he's going to let them for this whole godhood thing.
Okay, so that is the parallel to the prophets and the Pa-wraiths in DS9. Got it.
And then the other thing that happens that episode is we get the murder of the Vorlon. So the ancient race, this is kind of weird. He's an ambassador on the ship, which is, you know, just kind of funny. You know, God's chilling with everybody. A little bit of backstory, which we've covered in a few previous episodes, is really the Vorlons and the Shadows are two ancient races and really more two parents that have differing ideologies. What we end up with is, yeah, they're divorced parents using their kids in a proxy fight, which also explains a lot of why Sheridan even says, he's like, you could have blown us up the whole time. You're just, you know, sitting around here having us in an argument to prove who's right. So one of the Vorlon is just like an ambassador on the ship, which is hilarious. And they go, well, we can't have him around as we're planning to fight back. And so Sheridan has a Vorlon, a piece of a Vorlon inside of him.
I wondered how you'd explain this. This is great.
Which is a giant squid-like, like a light squid monster, but...
They're also, sometimes they're angels as well.
Well, no, they're telepathic. They are a giant telepathic squid monster that can travel around the universe inside of other organic beings.
Yeah, by putting a piece of themselves inside other beings.
So that's Vorlons, and they're also super powerful. They apparently have lightning power. So they shoot at this like suit that is containing the squid. It breaks out of the suit, and then Sheridan lets the Vorlon that was inside of him out, and they fight and go off in space and blow up a ship.
Yeah, it's like this spirit battle between two Vorlon angels that are, it's like a rotoscope thing where there's one yellow and one blue energy of light, one coming out of Sheridan, the other coming out of this tank suit.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then the other like minor thing that we'll be talking, not in this episode, but in future, Garibaldi, our second in command, is back as well. They verify that he's not an agent of the shadows. So the Vorlons can travel inside of people. The shadows will do like metal implants in people's heads to make them part of their ships and brainwash them. This show is so wild to just describe off the cuff, Mike.
It is, but it sounds like something I'd want to watch.
We'll definitely have to see, because we, you know, had Dave on and we had him watch the worst rated episode of the show.
That makes a lot of sense based on...
But yeah, the shadows can basically control people by putting, you know, like metal implants in their brain. And we verify that Garibaldi, our second in command, because he was taken away by the shadows, we verify he's not an agent of the shadows, so he's fine, right? As an FYI, the show has not so subtly been shown that something's going on with the Psi-Corps, our group of telepaths. That's hinted at there, but that's going to go on hold.
Well, yeah, because I was just going to catch up on that, because this is where they really start pushing Garibaldi's paranoia, which is going to become the main thrust of the whole next section of the show.
Mm.
Sheridan's come back kind of from the dead. Garibaldi comes back and sees that everyone's kind of almost deifying Sheridan. So he's becoming more and more suspicious of Sheridan. He's got this old alien guy with a jewel of his head that's following him around, that's not explained that well to anybody. So it really shows that he's going to go down a whole paranoia path, which is going to pay off, you know, down the line a lot. The other thing that's big in this is Cartesia has his guards pluck out Jakar's eyeball. That was one of the prophecies that we've seen him in the future, and this is kind of where it happens.
Okay, so it's Cartesia. That's how you say it. Okay.
Yeah, Emperor Cartesia, just to show just how cruel he is. The other big thing that's not going to come back until the end of the entire series is Lorian, the big jewel-headed alien I was mentioning, reveals that Sheridan has 20 years to live, because in the last couple episodes, he breathed life back into Sheridan, who died. So this will come back, I guess, way later, but he has a whole huge tearful scene with Delenn about, oh, I only have 20 years to live. Or she says, you only have 20 years to live. So they have to go through a couple scenes where they, you know, make amends with that with each other and stay together.
There's DS9 also deals a lot with that, just because Sisko is kind of at the mercy of the prophets, and yet he has a fiance and a son.
Mm-hmm. So let's hop right into the recap. Nothing else in front.
I don't think so, Dre. As you know, it is now time for the Talia Winter's memory quiz.
Oh, no.
Last time we had our first two guests and they got to buzz in. So I'm going to try the same thing, pitting you and Dre against each other. I want you to say your name to buzz in, followed by the answer. If you get it right, you get a point. Otherwise, the other person is going to get multiple choices and a chance to steal. All right. The first category is no quarter. According to Emperor Cartesia, how is Jakar to be put to death?
Oh, Hana.
Hana, what's the answer?
Vivisection.
Death by vivisection, correct. You're on the board with the first question. No multiple choice yet. Good job. Category the second, nerd numbers. In the opening scene, what sector did the message that Ivanova gets come from?
Why, Mike? This is named after me, and I failed this category.
Dre, there's going to be a random number question every episode.
So many numbers. Just do five.
All right. I'll give you four more. These are the multiple choice you have. You can buzz in at any time, so stop me if you're ready. A, Sector 9. B, Sector 36. C, Sector 7. Or D, Sector 900.
Dre, I'm going to go with 36, for whatever reason that sounds right.
That is incorrect. Hana, you get one chance.
Oh, God. Let's say Sector 7.
Ooh, close. I will give it to you because it was actually 900, which was the fourth answer. You chose the third answer, so we'll give the point to Hana.
Whatever. If I didn't love Taskmaster so much, I wouldn't put up with this from you, Mike. Anyway,
category the third. 70 song titles. What phrase do Sheridan and Ivanova use to describe the Shadows and Vorlons at war?
Oh, Hana.
Yes, Hana.
Mentioned it. Two giants fighting in a sandbox.
Ooh, that's very close. But let's see if Dre, do you know how close she was?
Can you? All right, I can give it to you. But I love the pedantry. You know me, Mike. So I'm going to say the official phrase is "Giants in the playground." Unfair, as mentioned, that was in the intro of season 5. So played in front of everyone. But Sheridan uses that phrase here, and when they're talking, they explicitly say they're giants in the playground knocking over sandcastles. So honestly, Mike, as much as I would love to come in with a steal, unless you are going for the exact phrase, I would count it.
We don't go exacties here. I'm going to have you split it. So it's half a point for each of you this time.
Exacties. All right. Anyway.
Half exacties. All right. Next category, Jakar Unbroken. What nearly unbreakable metal are Jakar's chains made from?
Can't remember I don't think it's a real metal, right? It's like a made up one, so
that's correct. All right, so I'm gonna go. Oh,
I remember
go ahead.
What letter it starts with.
It's A, adamantium, B, space whale bones, C, unobtainium, or D, carillium.
Hana.
Yes, Hana.
Liam.
Yes, you're correct. The last category is Jakar Omega. What Narn ruling council is the Jakar the last surviving member of?
Listen. Oh my God. This is embarrassing,
Mike. A lot of math in his head. Oh, I know. I figured you'd jump on this. You say it several times in this episode.
I'm going to get the multiple choice first, not even a question, but I am embarrassed that this has left my head.
All right. Well, I'm moving on to multiple choice. We have A, the Tekovma, B, the Kari.
D. I said my name first, right? I said D incorrectly, but I...
You get it in there, even though you said D incorrect first. All right, Dre gets...
B. The Kari, thank you.
So that comes out with Dre had 1.5 points and Hana had 3.5.
Take that long COVID-related brain fog.
Yeah, you got nothing on Hana.
Yeah.
All right, Dre, now I will give it back over to you. You can go into the episode at large.
But yes, as mentioned, we are on season 4 of Babylon 5. We are on the front half where I forgot how fast this moves. A lot gets wrapped up. We are doing episode 5 of season 4, or episode 71, if you're going all the way through, The Long Night, which is going to wrap up kind of the Centauri-Narn confrontation. Finally, we have some gloriously bad CGI to start.
And now, Dre explains.
Babylon 5 is very hit or miss, where they're one of the first shows to embrace CGI. Some of their CGI designs for the ships look fantastic, I would argue, can be on par with Star Trek, which, was using models. And models are always going to look better because they're custom crafted. Some of the CGI looks good. It's very hit or miss. Some bad CGI, because what we have is the Vorlons introduced a planet killer a few episodes ago, where they found like a rip in space-time, and there was a planet killer hiding out there, and they're starting to blow up all the planets with the shadows, which, as we brought up, is important because Centauri know they're now on watch, and their emperor is like asleep at the wheel saying, yeah, if they blow up the planet, I get to be an even better god. But the shadows have their own as well. So the shadows have like they both kind of do a similar thing, and we'll find out more about it next episode. But the shadows like bombard a planet with a bunch of missiles, and the missiles go to the planet's core and blow it up from the inside out. And so, yeah, we have these two god races that are literally, they were before saying, let's have our, let's see which of our philosophies makes the best younger race, messed up eugenic style thing. But don't worry, it won't be the last one on this episode. They start with that, and they've hit the point where, F it, we're just going to each destroy each other's stuff.
Yeah, I actually thought that that graphic display that they have of the robots surrounding the planet was pretty cool looking and pretty frightening for an opening of, this is the kind of stuff that they're doing to a planet now.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty much comparing it to any CG of the time. Mm-hmm. It's on par with that. It's just, you know, it's the time period.
We've definitely found a divide on guests with that, rightfully so. Okay, do we remember what CGI looked? Do we remember Toy Story being revolutionary and now it looks worse than all of those videos that they just throw at your kids? So yeah, and definitely cool that you're in the former camp as opposed to the latter.
I don't know. Are you watching re-rendered really popular shows from a long time ago, or are you into the weeds? I think that's the...
Yeah. Well, a lot of our guests are illustrators, too, or graphic artists in some way.
Oh, so they'll notice shit that I'm not.
They have deep opinions on this stuff, too. Yeah. But yeah, I like how it fits the time, what it does. That's why I like this show. I mean, even going back to season one, I almost always brought back to the Doctor Who-ishness. It seemed to be like almost a British sitcom level of, hey, let's put on a play together and dress up as aliens with our friends type of thing. I really enjoyed that for the first season.
Yeah. I will throw that this episode definitely felt on that. You know, we have a lot of like state theater, right? Doctor Who, right? A lot of this episode is going to be theatric in a good way. And I forget the actor's name, but you were saying Sisko on Deep Space Nine. I would say Jakar, played by Andreas Katsoulis, the one-armed man in The Fugitive, is the most famous role. A lot of the show works because of him, and he just is amazing at chewing the scenery in a way that should be unbelievable. For a true story, by the way, behind the scenes, the Narn are supposed to be lizard marsupials. Lizard marsupials. That's why they say pouchling on the show, by the way, Mike.
Yeah, because they use the pouch stuff all the time when they talk. That makes sense.
But yeah, he does that, and he does a good job of that. And a lot of this episode is going to be that. Speaking of getting to a theatric scene that I just love, again, this is your first episode, Hannah, but this has been a running thing through this season, which is the plot to overthrow the Emperor Kataja. And so Londo is in this room with a bunch of other people, and they're like, we have to kill the Emperor. Here's how we kill the Emperor. Behind weeds for fans of the show, we have a script where Mike and I pass notes to each other. It's one of my favorite parts of the week. Mike watches the episode first. I watch it without looking at Mike's notes because I don't want Mike's notes spoiled. And then I go through Mike's notes and respond to them about ridiculous stuff we saw. And Hannah, you jumped in, which was great. And you asked about, hey, I bet these people that are just openly discussing treason, there's great devices, and I do have to give you a back scene. One of the first times this shows up, Londo is literally holding a bug that he's discovered and says, ah, they're bugging my room, but we should be okay for now. And with the bug like 2 inches from his face, is like, now let's discuss how we're going to destroy the Emperor. So that's been like a running thing this entire...
It even goes further than that. In that scene, he destroys the bug, and then like he talks to Veer and says, yes, they always put another one in its place very soon, so we only have a few minutes to talk. So it's like they even admitted that it should be the bugs all over the place in the recording.
Perfect. I also wrote down, they mentioned someone called Lord Rifa. I did not know who that was. I assumed a Gen X weed dealer at a mid-sized college.
Yeah, spot on.
Mike, do you want to, he was your favorite. So spoiler, past spoiler, he is killed in a previous episode.
Yeah, he's dead by now. But he was one of Londo's rivals for the throne of the Centauri Empire. They were both like doing schemes with each other and behind each other's backs. So eventually he got poisoned by Londo. But it was a fun, who's going to be the winner of the schemer this week, Londo or Rafa?
And the end way, by the way, that he kills him is Londo teams up with Jakar to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That was an interesting episode. And we'll have lots to say about that when we get to Veer in the future. Season 3, a funny one where our Captain Sheridan is talking to Ivanova and is saying, Ivanova, you know, we're about to go to this big rave together, the big war against the shadows. And he goes, but hey, sorry to do this to you. You got to pick up some friends. So the first ones are the oldest race in the galaxy, you know, basically viewed as gods by the younger races because, you know, they're that much technologically advanced. And Sheridan says, hey, we got to go pick up all the first ones. So you might, you know, you'll come to the battle, but you might be late. And she's, don't let me be late. My, you know, people abandon me all the time. You got to promise me that you're going to bring me there with you. It's a weird scene.
Yeah, well, the whole point of that is to bring back to the story of her mom, how her mom left her. And that gave her just those feelings of detachment all the time and fear of being left out of anything for the rest of her life.
That was a messed up story to just randomly throw on us, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't just leave her, like, killed herself.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we already knew all the stuff about her being a telepath and having to turn herself over the Psi-Corps, but she never... This is the first time where she really goes far deep into the story about her connection with her mom that last time.
She's a good actress. She's pretty good. We move on to our Caligula scene, is how you say it. We do also have the fun end, which is this emperor, this crazy emperor this entire time was saying he's going to sacrifice himself to become a god, does tell Londo, hey, guess what? I'm not going to do that. Also, just for clarity, because this is a little bizarre, they are in a court-like scenario, but they are on Narn. So Narn is the homeworld of the lizard people. They're Centauri. What they have done is Centauri is going to be blown up. So they have flown to Narn to execute Jakar, and then they're going to fly back. Yeah, then they're going to fly back to Centauri and, you know, all die together. And then our emperor does, you know, the classic, you know, it's two on the nose, right? Cartesia, he was 30 years before Trump, and it's been so frustrating to watch this show about, you know, the insane person doing all these crazy things with the enablers that all know he's insane but are too scared to do anything.
I was going to say, like, in the last episode, they spent a lot of time convincing Cartesia as part of the plan to come to Narn to execute Jakar just to make a show. Like, Londo specifically convinces him to do it there just so people will know of him after he blows everybody up. So that he's just trying to put fear into these people's eyes, blow up his whole planet, and go on to become a god.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, there have been very obvious villainous dictators before Trump who were just as dumb. It's just that they did not, you know, they did not have 24/7 recording.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have podcasts back then. They did not have 24/7 news outlets back then. Hitler was a meth addicted crazy person. Goebbels was the smart one. You know, it's kind of, Pol Pot killed people because they wore glasses and therefore might be intellectuals. They're all, so it is on the nose, but it's not untrue.
And I'll say, I can't blame it, but, you know, a very common sci-fi trope is the, oh, we're going to reveal this person is evil, and as soon as we do that, we win. This isn't quite sci-fi, but, you know, Batman Returns with the Penguin. Yeah. They get that horrible recording of him, and they play it to everybody, and, oh, his career is done. And we've compared this show to StarCraft at least a few times, right, Mike? Yeah. So, you know, in StarCraft 2, spoilers.
It's the entire plot of The X-Files.
It is so frustrating to be someone that grew up on sci-fi, and the plot device is, our heroes will find the truth. Our heroes will reveal the truth to the masses, and the masses will rise up against this horrible person once they realize it. And then to have gone through 2016 and 2024 and just be like, oh,
yeah, huh. That's not how it works. Yep.
Huh. So you knew.
Propaganda is a powerful thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Long line of disappointments my fiction and science fiction set me up for.
Yep.
Yeah. Curse
pretty
you, much. Curse you, science fiction. All right, back to the plotting and open sight. So Londo visits Jakar in prison. He, as Mike mentioned on the last episode, lost his eye. And it all happened because the Emperor keeps torturing him and saying, I'm going to torture him until he screams. Jakar is too proud to scream. He finally screams on the last episode, giving up his pride, giving up his honor. And at the end of it, the Emperor says, yeah, you know, I got my scream, but he's not looking at me nicely. What should I do? Londo sneaks away, and Jakar loses his eye as a result. So, you know, he comes in, and Jakar is just, hey, man, I've been thinking, you're a fucking asshole. And Londo's, yeah, fair enough, but we still got a deal, right? And let's just talk openly about our deal with guards right outside the door. Shout out to Mad Bread for noticing that in the previous episode. But then, you know, they basically agree. He gives them the plot. He's like, FYI, I'm gonna rig your chain so you can escape and you cause a distraction. Gives very clear advice, like the smart thing. Don't lay your hands on the emperor if you want your people to be free. It's like weird. You have to cause a distraction, but don't hurt anyone, which is understandably tough. I'm going to rig it for you so we're all fine. And then when we go out, we see that the emperor, who like a jester offended him, like a court jester literally offended him. And everybody's like scared what's going to happen. And then we see at the end that he shoots him, and then we do get like a weird JMS. Is it a joke? Is it not? Where the emperor says, comedy's so subjective, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. I wrote so much for Jester's Privilege.
Yeah. I like that it comes in the last scene where everybody in the courtroom scene stopped. It's like the music stopped. The record scratch almost happened when the jester was making fun of Cartesia and kind of mimicking him. And it's like every eye went over to Cartesia until he let the pause go, and then and everybody laughs after him for a minute. And that was right before this next scene where he gave that line about humor is so subjective.
I definitely have to do a me-ism, like any guest on the show has to hear me. So what did you think of that scene? Londo and Jakar are usually regarded as like bright spots on the show. And right, this is more theatric, right? We don't have to worry about dated CGI. I think both their costumes are pretty good. I am definitely curious how like the Londo-Jakar interaction scenes played to you.
They did, I guess. I didn't know Londo's history, which kind of, I could pretty much tell Jakar's history just by his circumstance. And that, you know, his acting hit me very hard, especially at the end, which I won't.
Yeah, spoil, we'll talk about a bunch. Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of got pieces of the dynamic where it's a little push pull. There's a lot of mistrust.
Yeah, that's Londo at this point. He's been very regretful about his past behavior. I mean, he was basically responsible for a genocide of Jakar's people a long time ago. So he's slowly coming around towards making up for that while still doing his own double dealing in the background. So yeah, it's nice to see that that's still coming across for someone who sees Londo for the first time.
Although I will definitely say between Londo and Jakar, especially with the accent and stuff, like I think Andreas Katsoulis is almost timeless in the show. And we've had multiple guests kind of bring that up. Londo, even like Peter Jurisic is a great actor and great voice. In real life, he's got like a New York accent.
Hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, now the next scene is interesting. We get more of our plot where...
Dre, how do I work this poison injector?
I do love this because it's like a great device. There is a poison injector. I got this great poison. You poke it between the two hearts. It's almost instant. As you pull it out, it also like removes any evidence. It's the perfect killing device. There was a guy nearby that did it. So many questions, but sure, we'll give it to you because it's a nice plot thing. And then one of these, I'm definitely curious how these play, right? Because we have these weird humor interlaced with stuff, and it's always hit or miss. And I don't even know how I feel being a fan of the show, but right, they're like joking back and forth about what's going to happen about killing him. And I think this is like the third or fourth guest right now, Mike, that I've asked, right? Like, how did this Veer Londo serious / comedy scene play to you?
That felt more like panic humor, which made sense due to the circumstance, where it's not actually funny, but when you're in a situation with someone else that is dire, you have that bond and you do that. And so it felt natural to me in that way. I think there's a DS9 equivalent. There's a scene where O'Brien rips his pants and they're all about to die and they just laugh because he ripped his pants.
Oh, we all love Miles.
And it's not like actually funny. It's only funny because they're about to die.
Yeah. Well, it's part of, like they're just trying to deflate their insane situation. Like Vera's talked a lot about
exactly.
His crazy nerves all of a sudden. And then they kind of catch themselves in the moment at the end. We're like, oh, we're joking about killing each other and that's what we're doing.
We get to the like climactic scene of this. It's interesting. It's a look. I can go both ways. It looks very, you know, high school play, but not super horrible, where Jakar comes out into the same hallway where every single Centauri and Narn scene has been filmed for the last six episodes. He's got chains on, but he also, I noticed he's got like this weird muzzle wood thing around his neck and these chains.
Yeah, it's like a medieval stockade.
Yeah, yes. And the only reason that hit me is because, you know, we've told that the chains are super hard to break. What we get told, right, is the Emperor says, hey, I thought the other chains looked weak, so I had them switched out, which is hilarious. You know, you're like, what's going to happen? A metaphor I'm going to bring in for this show is professional wrestling. When I bring up the character of Londo and Jakar and their history, it really smacks a lot to me of professional wrestling. Jumping ahead to something I put in the notes, like Londo later is my honor is all I have. And I'm like, that does not line up with your history at all in the show. And wrestling does the same thing, right? These two people were enemies and they're enemies for like horrible reasons. You lit me on fire as a kid. Mm-hmm. It's Undertaker and Kane. And then like best buds, you're like, wait, what? And that's, you know, wrestling just very much is like action figures that change. And I do feel that Babylon 5 does that at time, right? Jakar should never be friends with Londo.
An actor in DS9 had to talk the writers out of making her sleep with someone who committed genocide against her people, who she directly hates. So this tracks.
But yeah, so we have all of, you know, Jakar is there. And then the reason I brought the wrestling thing up is stuff like this has actually happened in wrestling where a chain link fence is supposed to be gimmicked, is what it's called, where the wrestler is able to rip it off. And someone messed up. And there are stories of like super strong wrestlers that actually were able to rip it off or hilariously couldn't. But what we do see immediately is we're told Jakar can't break these chains. I was just like, yeah, but part of the get up is wood. So break the wood part.
Break the wood.
But it does look like he's just strong enough to break the chains. That's what we're kind of told. Although if you look, like, the chain is very clearly gimmicked. So the
text. Yeah, the close up of it, like almost like putty being stretched from each other. Yeah, for the trick chain.
But yeah, Jakar is able to break out of his chains, start a big ruckus, you know, keeps to his orders, doesn't hurt anybody. Shockingly doesn't get shot, but, you know, we're not in the scene to see how that doesn't happen. Londo says, Emperor, let's go. He gets him into the next room. And classic Londo, our bumbling genocidal buffoon, pulls out his poison. And the Emperor is just like ranting, and he like turns around and slaps him in the face, and he drops the poison. And what's going to happen? And then he turns around. Veer is right behind him, happens to have picked up the poison, stabs him. And a little behind the scenes on that is J. Michael Straczynski said in writing that scene, he had always envisioned Londo murdering the Emperor. And then we got around to writing it. He was like, the Veer character in his head said, I have to kill him. It's going to work so much better.
There's several reasons why that worked. Like, just one or two episodes before this, we get Veer has that big realization scene after Cartesia comes in after personally torturing Jakar. And you can see Veer, this like Jiminy Cricket, usual, like very kind-hearted person, just have murder behind his eyes. Like, it was foreshadowed, even if JMS didn't realize he was doing it. And then to be able to have Veer continue on after this, which we're going to go to the next scene pretty soon, like, he's the one who is going to feel the worst about it. Londo won't think second. He's been plotting to do this for a long time. But because that turn comes and has the character you wouldn't think expect, you get to have the next scenes where he gets to deal with the ramifications of it more.
Now we get a lot of rushing in the next scene, which is a dude comes in and it's what happened? They're like, the Emperor's heart gave out from this, whatever. Someone go look at him. And then he goes off. Everybody was in on this big conspiracy. We saw that in the beginning. Londo very quickly is, here's all the things we need to do. And then a random dude just comes in and goes, hey, Cartesia's dead. He doesn't have a line of succession. I say, as a result, you need to be the prime minister, Londo Mollari, and take care of everything. And just part of his backstory has been that he keeps seeing himself being emperor of Centauri Prime and not wanting it. You know, half yes, half no, right? He definitely wants the power, and then every time he gets close, I don't want it. And so this is one step closer to him becoming emperor. Then I think just a lot of expedition dump. If you caught half of it, I'm impressed. Because, yeah, as mentioned, because they had to cut season in half, basically, we get a lot of wrap-up. And I'm noticing on rewatch, like, how much wrap-up just happens, you know, in one character spewing, like, four paragraphs that have three references to each of the previous seasons.
The whole Cartesia plot is the finish of a six-episode arc. And then the other part of the plot that we're going to go to, it's not even an A-B that they go between. They pretty much slice this episode in half, and then we have the penultimate episode of another huge arc that's been going on. So thanks for dealing with it, Hanna.
I am so excited. We get Breaking Bad. I didn't know this was going to make it organically because I didn't remember where it happened. But yep. Brian, a young Brian Cranston is in. This is pre-Malcolm in the Middle
so
Brian Cranston.
So young, I did not recognize him.
Yep. Neither did JMS at all, who's just another actor to him on stage. He was like, man, that guy did really good for that bit character actor.
All right. So what we get, as I mentioned, this one was played for laughs, which was weird. So we go to the big control room where they're discussing what's going to happen. And Lanier, the weak bonehead sidekick to Delenn, you know, crown bonehead, keeps trying to give information. Here's the thing. And everybody keeps cutting him off when they're asking about the Vorloth in the shadows. Because they're basically saying they have to find a way to intercept them, but they don't know where they're going to be. And then eventually what we get is Bryan Cranston comes up and he's, I'm tailing the shadows. Their evil weapons are terrible. And Sheridan ominously is, hey, I'm going to give you a call right back. Might be a rough call. And then Lemire finally gets, you know, his thing out. He's like, yeah, if any of you would have listened to me, they're probably going to go to Coriana 6. That would have been a number I would have missed too, Mike, if it had been on the quizzes incidentally. Okay. Lanier says, yeah, we've tracked that the Vorlons are en route to Coriana 6. Sheridan says, Delenn, go get everybody to see this footage of what the shadows are doing. So Bryan Cranston just saw the shadows blowing up a planet. The Vorlons are blowing up a planet. Sheridan says, go show everybody what the Shadows are doing. Meet back up and we're going to give them a plan. Ooh, ominous.
Yeah, because before this, they were trying to get all of the non-aligned worlds together to fight against the Shadows. And they need something like this to show them, to pull them together as one unit, as we'll find.
All right. Yeah, what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to wrap up the Centauri Prime. There is some intersplicing, as with all sci-fi shows, but we'll wrap up Centauri Prime and Jakar. Then we'll wrap up that, and that'll be the SOD.
Yeah, I was surprised they only did this one, the little bit at the beginning, and here is the only time they cut between. They really kept it tight on just one plot at a time this episode.
Which does seem to make sense, given the importantness. We get a drunk Veer, and this, I really did think Stephen First, however you'd say it, really showed his acting chops, because he is just drunk. I love it, because he's actually showing remorse and guilt and feeling over just killing someone and all the stuff that he has to do. And Londo comes in, and God bless the actor and the character of playing the most perfect abusive father, where he comes in and he's, you know, man, I was always mean and hard on you, but it's because I love you. And it's like this entire scene, just great acting on Veer's part. But kind of him getting over it and Londo being like, okay, now we got to go back and do stuff. And I think it does end with like Veer looking out the window as the Narn are celebrating, because I did kind of, that was the funny part of this, right? The conclusion of murdering Emperor Cartesia, the deal he struck with Jakar, was that he would get the Centauri off of Narn's planet. The occupiers would leave. And the way he does that is he just looks at everybody and says, hey, everybody, should we leave? And they're like, yeah, we're good.
Well, I think it's even better. Like, we talked a little bit before already about having Veer actually be the one to murder Cartesia gave us this scene where he gets to reflect on everything. But the end of that scene just reminds me that Veer was the one who had the Underground Railroad going on for Narns the whole time. He had the whole Abraham Lincoln episode where he was secretly doing that during the genocide. So it's nice to see him get that resolution to the arc of him just watching the Narns actually celebrate Centauri leaving. He got to be there for that moment. So yeah, just one more way why I think JMS was leading up to Veer doing the killing Cartesia the whole time.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Although I did appreciate that, you know, like I said, trying to explain show in the notes. So two things that happen in the scene is, you know, Londo goes, you know, we're going to leave. I've got my honors. The only thing I've got left. And then we're propping Veer up as a hero. And I did mention, yeah, as a funny backstory, that Veer was doing an underground railroad for the Narn, but he also almost gets engaged to basically a racist plantation owner murderer. And he's kind of like, she might be all right. So these characters.
Hey, you take the good with the bad.
So some of the backstory stuff does get hilarious. And even though it's even for like, GTFO Veer, so it is fun. He is supposed to be the good character, and even him, I'm like, if I explain his backstory, no. But yeah, and I guess I'll point this out, just as a weird top level. I think this hits Star Trek. I think, Mike, we could just definitively save it at the end. Like, the Centauri as a whole, even the best of the best on the Centauri, like, not good.
Yeah, we get a lot of the Caligula-type scenes of the Emperor. We get a lot of the shadowy deals in the background, too. But yeah, that's mostly what we see of the Centauri people, aside from just being on Babylon 5 with Londo.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a thesis statement of Deep Space Nine is humans are peaceful because all of our basic needs are met now. That if you take that away again, humans become violent. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, people are products of their environment. And if their environment is racist and colonizing, they're going to be shitty. And you see that in DS9 as well. That is just kind of a truth that we know, even if we don't really think about it.
Yeah, like they have characters, especially from both Earth Force and from Centauri, who have grown up through propaganda, and you get to hear their perspectives on things, and it's very carefully written from somebody who's never heard anything else but propaganda. So all they want to talk about is how there's no crime, how the streets are great, how it's beautiful on Earth because they've taken care of all the riffraff, and there's just all this undercurrent of what's really going on because, you know, the politics.
Yeah.
And to finally wrap up Narn, Jakar sees all of the Narn just like looting the throne room, which I'm down with, right? They're because it was a faux throne room. Like, they had literally gentrified part of Narn to replicate Centauri, and they're like, F no. So Jakar walks in, last of Akari, which was the previous ruling council, and he even mentions it in this scene, and I already forgot that, Mike. So he comes in, everybody's wrecking, and they're like, he's like, why are you celebrating? So I disagree with Dad a little there, but whatever. And then they're going, okay, well, what do we do now? We're going to rebuild. We're going to fight back. And this has been a long running thing with them. It was started off by Kosh, a black sheep Vorlon, to kind of teach Jakar, like, hey, how to move on from the cycle of violence, to move on from this, you know, being trapped in the various roles between the Narn and Centauri. And so he's, no, we're not going to go back to war. We got to move on. Have I taught you nothing? And then they say something like, well, what have you endured? It's a little funny in that he has gotten this in previous episodes because he took sanctuary on Babylon 5. So, you know, he's living on a space station. Everybody else is in a war zone, and they're, you know, he's feeling guilty about that in previous episodes. But in this case, he was about to get vivisected. His eye has been pulled out. He's bleeding. And they go, what have you endured? And he just repeats it, laughs, and walks out the door. And I think you said, right, like, this, despite all of the stuff thrown at you this episode, the Jakar story in this episode, like, as a new observer, you basically are able to get it all from just this episode.
Yeah.
Laugh, mainly, honestly. Yeah.
I like how they've had to make it so on the nose with the what have I endured, because, yeah, all these Narns just saw what he had to endure. He was in the locks in front of everybody busting out, and already they're questioning as the political movement's going on, hey, we just want to burn things down. So I think that was kind of well done at the end without being, you know, without JMS coming out and saying that these things just go in cycles that we don't realize. I like him showing that with the Narn.
Yeah. Yeah. And they do. Not going to talk about that. Okay.
Bryan Cranston comes back on and he basically says, here's the deal. His big plan is they know where the Vorlons are going. And he's like, I want the shadows there too. And he goes, the only way we're going to get the shadows there is if we leak them information. So there's a Chekhov's Coventry in a season 2 episode. Sheridan laments to a side character about World War II. They love World War II metaphors in the show. Pretty easy to see most of them. And he says, Churchill knew of an upcoming attack, but he knew that if he revealed the upcoming attack, the Germans would know that he knew, and then he wouldn't be able to do it in the future. So, like, he had to willingly sacrifice a city to win the bigger war. And in that episode, it's played on a very small stake, where Sheridan's, I don't know if I could ever make that call. And he does in that episode, but the stakes are much, much smaller. But we see him actually do it here, where he basically tells Bryan Cranston, I want you to leak information to the shadows so that they will show up in the sector. The only way they're going to buy it is if someone dies. Has a messed up line where he's just, you married? And he's nice. Well, there's that at least. And I'm like, all right.
That's okay.
Kind of messed up. You're moving on rather quick there.
Yeah.
And then they have this.
Well, it's a shorthand. They have to go dark very fast with what he's suggesting without going through every beat. And so that was a very quick shorthand. Oh, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. In front of this big room that has way too many people for a plot this important, in my opinion. But, you know, to show the gravity, right? We have all the different alien races and people. We basically hear him say, we're going to need you to, you know, sacrifice your ship to convince the shadows of this thing. It's of the utmost importance. And then at the very end of the episode, what we get is Sheridan listening to a broadcast of the ship, like, dying. And I did put in the notes, I said, live broadcast or rebroadcast, shockingly clear. If they're in space and this is happening, you know, light years away, is he getting a live feed of this? Because if he's getting a live feed, that's, like, shockingly good for what we're being told. Because we're being told it's going to take these ships, like, days to get to their destination. But he's got, like, a real-time radio feed. But Sheridan hears it, goes, they took the bait. And then we end the episode very Star Wars-like. The entire big fleet that's been assembled going off into space. And that's going to lead us into our next episode. Yeah.
Yeah. At first, we're like, oh, shoot, we gave Hanna one where that's like they don't actually finish it at the end. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's all of them.
I mean, it seems like that if you had to truncate 2 seasons into 1, that would happen.
Well, what the good thing, though, is out of season 4, we get 3, I think, huge plot arcs that work really well. The first one with Cartesia and the Centauri.
Yeah.
The second one, how they finish off the whole big Shadow and Vorlon war. And then the feeling for that we're going to get later on in this season is that, wait, that was it? That was what we were leading up to. And then what they pull out later with Earth Force versus the Clark administration, it just, he figures out how to bring something else, a new trick out of his sleeve that brings it up to the next level that comes out of the story that came before, which is why, like, hell, season 4, I think, is the best season of Babylon 5. It was JMS forced to pull that trick out of his hat.
That's pretty cool.
So we reached the end. So that, you know, the two questions are, what did you think of the episode? And are you going to watch any more after this?
I honestly can't tell you what I thought.
You are not the first person to say that. I love this.
I felt like I need more the whole time. So that's how I felt.
That sounds like a point towards the might watch more.
I might. Yeah, I think I might. It seems like something I want to say. I want to see how two different shows tackled the same script Bible. I really want to see that. So I was already kind of on board before watching this episode. And yeah, some of this swayed me further, despite budgetary constraints. Yeah, I'm going to get to this.
Okay, very last thing. Is there anything you think anyone of the show has got to check out? We already had the Bellatro was the first thing you had said. So I don't know if there's anything else you think anybody should check out.
I did mention Pluribus. I feel like we did mention Breaking Bad, same showrunner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is going to be another mystery box show where little things get resolved and we never get further or not. So I will give you that caveat. Things seem to be moving, but I don't know yet.
Yeah.
I will give you that. And you know what? With that, The Chair Company is a perfect parody of all of those mystery box shows. So go ahead and watch that for sure.
Yeah, The Chair Company is great. I think I have 2 or 3 more episodes left, but I've been trying to get through that on the side of Babylon 5 watching. It is great. I can second that one.
Let me know if you feel the same way. There's an episode that it maybe should have ended on that it doesn't end on. But maybe that's part of the Mystery Box parody.
That's true.
There are often episodes things should have ended on that they don't end on.
Like I said, defer to you, Ahana, on do you want socials for people to interact or not? Or, you know, Gamefully Unemployed, I know you're in the Discord.
On pretty much all of my socials, my name is, it's just my name because no one else has this name spelled this way. It's weird. Hanamichels on pretty much everything. I'm not on Twitter much anymore. I got deplatformed when I pretended to be Elon Musk's mom.
I forgot. Oh, that was so,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it sucks, right? That's just that was so good. That was so good.
Was
I forgot that.
That was a fun 5 minutes. Definitely worth it.
Well, wasn't that when they did the random thing where you weren't allowed to change your name if you wanted to keep the whatever? So like you were like, okay, I changed to Elon Musk's mom as a joke, and now I literally can't change it back by his own policies. I was like,
yeah,
that was great.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't. And it was a while before he removed everyone's check marks. And I don't even think I took a picture of his mom, which are very available. I just picked some random old lady.
What? Oh, I didn't even realize. Oh, this is so much better. That's awesome. Sorry. Yeah.
Which I hope she's not still alive because that's just someone who posed for public domain photos. But I guess that's what happens when you pose for public domain photos.
You're going to beat it.
You're ready for that. I mean, a lot of actors do it, and a lot of actors have regrets.
Thank you. This was a blast. I cannot thank you enough for being on the show. And I'll definitely back channel on any Babylon 5 cards just because of your proximity to Jeff, you and Dave being able to open cards is a thing that I've been absolutely loving and love sending Jeff.
Yeah, I get to be jealous of that too. I haven't been on any pack openings yet. We got some Babylon 5 cards, though. At some point, we're going to try that ourselves, right, Dre?
Oh, we got it when I get my home office set up to break again.
Heck yeah. I'm definitely going to start getting into altering again. I want to do some painting videos. So yeah, there's definitely the chance to open some magic cards and do some alters of some stuff too. But yeah, that's down the road. Yeah, I don't have much of anything else this episode. Nothing for me to plug. Just the next episode of this podcast, Dre. I mean, we're going to be covering season 4, episode 6, Into the Fire, the very next episode. So we'll get to see how that last plot line ends up after all.
And I am 70% certain of the guests, so don't want to spoil them just yet in case, but I am super excited about the guest. And using a little bit of peer pressure, Hannah, we were able to say, hey, everybody else hasn't watched it ahead of time, so go in blind. So they have committed to going in blind as well.
So yeah, thank you for doing this, spending time with us, giving us this time, because yeah, we get to legitimize ourselves through you a little bit more.
I know, I would not consider myself someone who legitimizes anyone, so
well,
I appreciate that.
This feels very legitimate, just talking to you in a conversation. This is such a blast, Hannah, thank you.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
All right, and so the last plugs, just in case, patreon.com/Jeff May. If you want what I would say bonus features, I'm not going to say advanced because that would be disingenuous, but extra content if you want that. If you want to know more about the show, that's where the show was birthed. That's where extra content goes, patreon.com/Jeff May. Definitely follow the feeds, legit. You got to check this out with Mike and Dre. MikeSlater.com has so much supplemental material. Mike takes screenshots of the show, great recaps, great random games. You are a game master. So Slatron or Slatron11 on the socials, MikeSlater.com, and then I'm pretty much Nerd Numbers everywhere, occasionally in the Gamefully Unemployed Movie Nights. It's a little past, it's weird. It's a little before my bedtime, if that makes any sense. So I haven't been able to make it as much, but absolutely love that as well. Thanks, everybody. And again, last note, Into the Fire if you want to get ahead before next episode.
Cheers, all.